So, hey, I want to welcome you guys today to the Vic Tipner Show. I got this badass guy, Nick Sarnicola, with me. Amazing guy, amazing career. He's done a tremendous amount of stuff. He's actually going to be on the panel for the Rise Conference. So you have to come and listen to what this guy's talking about in terms of network marketing, building a sales team. This guy's got amazing, amazing experiences, life advice for you. So tell me a little about yourself, man. From what I've heard, you have a pretty amazing career, man.
Yeah, there was definitely a great run. I'm actually the one story of a kid that got recruited out of the mall for the direct sales network marketing industry that it worked. So I got involved in direct sales network when I was 18, playing college baseball.
Yeah.
Fell in love with the industry, mastered sales and mastered sales leadership, became the number one of that company, and the company went out of business, so we bought the assets of it. We just took the assets and rolled into a new brand, which is Visalus.
Yeah.
Ran it up to $40 million a year, crashed to $600,000 a month in sales when the recession hit. Sales dropped by 2/3. We said, okay, well, here's a point of, you know, truth. What are we gonna do to save this? And we came up with the idea of challenge-based marketing. So we were the first people with a weight loss and fitness challenge. We were the first people to Facebook with
it. So how does that work?
We bought challenge.com. We created Body by Vi, the 90-day challenge. And we owned all the supplements. Mm-hmm. So for us, it was, okay, everyone right now is worried about money. They don't want to buy a high-end supplement. How the heck are we going to survive? Mm-hmm. We actually had a really good tasting meal replacement shake, but nobody was really buying it because our focus was selling it, you know, these supplements. Mm-hmm. So we just made the number three product the main focus.
Right.
Because meal replacement was always going to be cheaper than McDonald's or Burger King for middle America.
Yeah.
So I said, well, that's not enough. We need to add something else. And we came up with the idea of challenge-based marketing. We bought challenge.com, mm-hmm. launched the first, you know, true 90-day challenge, mm-hmm. And ran it up to, this is 2010. 2012, we did $627 million in sales. We were 19% of the protein shake market in America.
Wow.
And then everybody figured it out. And within a year or two, there was 50,000 weight loss and fitness challenges.
Yeah.
Now it's probably 200,000.
So how old were you when that happened? So you started this business when?
I was 26 when we started Visalus.
And then, yeah.
I sold at 41. Second time I sold at 41.
Second time, okay. Yeah. So during that time as you're scaling, you're going all through these ups and downs and all that. What were some of the big key takeaways for you? Because, you know, what a lot of people that are watching, a lot of the entrepreneurs that are watching this, they're going to look at it and they're going to say, okay, what were your takeaways? So typically everyone asks, what did you do when it was great?
Yep.
And what did you do when it was bad?
I'd say one is make sure you have great legal, which is
a
sales leader.
Yeah.
It doesn't register. I don't like looking at a contract, let alone reading one, right?
Yeah.
So great business partners. When we were at our best, we had, you know, just the greatest business partnership. And when we weren't, I think what I can say on screen would be we didn't hold each other to the highest levels of accountability. Mm-hmm. I think it's the way to position that. Because when you build just such this brotherhood.
Talk about that, though. Accountability. You're talking about just like exactly what? Playing the role that you're supposed to
behavior,
play?
Behavior. You know, just as an adult, you know what's right from wrong. You know what you should be doing, you shouldn't be doing. You know what you know what's extreme and what's not extreme. And we just didn't hold each other to the highest level of accountability with certain behaviors that ended up having an extremely negative ripple effect throughout the company. The key lesson there was, you know, having great business partners is such a superpower. Mm-hmm. But once you guys make it, if you can't hold each other to the highest level of standards and accountability, it works completely against you.
Oh, yeah. You die on the vine.
It works. I mean, because you can't, it's not like an executive. You can't just walk in and be like, hey, we got to let you go. It's just like it's everyone's blood, sweat, and tears until that point. So
yeah,
I think we avoided some very tough conversations and some very tough decisions. And
so now you're 41. What happened?
44. Oh, sorry. 44
so when you, yeah. But then you sold your 41.
Yeah, 41. My business partner, Blake, stayed on. Pruvit, which is the largest manufacturer of exogenous ketones in the world. They took over our company. Blake stayed on. He's the president of North America. And I moved forward and recently started a sales accelerator. So I'd spent, you know, 25 years building armies, sales armies. The biggest one was 120,000 active salespeople in 17 countries.
How do you find those people? You know, I'm always amazed. I'm just so old school. Like, I'm a brick and mortars business guy. Yeah. You know, I love, like,
direct sales networking is a phenomenon in its own. So, and what's funny is,
well, you place an ad. Like, how do you?
No,
how do you get
no,
those
it's
people?
All word of mouth. But then you add that to social media. Yeah. Word of mouth is everyone all the time to thousands of people.
Yeah.
We were 20 at the time, 27, 28, and 30 when we launched Body by Vi, the 90-Day Challenge. And this is right when Facebook is just starting open to the public. So it was natural for us to just be us on social media.
Yeah.
Where every other company, that wasn't natural for them. Like, what do you mean? So they create like a page and they post their product and we're just doing life.
Yeah.
And then we learned how to, in 2010, how to script it, how to have people, at that time there's no videos yet on social, what posts to make. Hey guys, I just started my 90-day challenge. My goal is to lose 30 pounds the next 90 days. I want you either to support me or join me. Like, who wants to do a challenge with me?
I just find that stuff fascinating. It's like a whole new world to me.
Yeah, and it just went crazy. It went viral.
Yeah.
You know, we had 3.6 million customers in 6 or 7 years.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, this was the most extreme of all highs and the most extreme of all lows. The biggest event we had was, I sold out the Miami Heat Arena with 14,000. And these were just the salespeople that showed up. And it's just crazy when there's that many people.
Because for them, it's supplemental income.
Correct.
Right? A lot of these people have full-time jobs, right?
Most of them.
And most of them.
Their dream is to get out.
It's that big of a market, I guess, right? For people that want to have supplemental income.
Network marketing is just gig economy before gig economy is called gig economy. Gig economy is now the cool term for what network marketers are doing since 1940.
Yeah.
And then affiliate is just another clever way of network marketing.
It's of course.
Affiliate is 1 to 2 levels. Party plan is 2 to 3 levels. True, and these are legal definitions. True multi-level marketing is 4 to 7 levels. It's a legal, it's a legal reference. So some companies that don't want to be known as them, I'm like, oh, we're an affiliate model. I'm like, you have 5 levels. You're legally, by a lawyer in a court's definition, you are multi-level marketing.
Right.
So it's really, it's a definition of that. I took a year off and then just launched a sales accelerator where top sales professionals only, top 1 of 1%. The macro idea is, I'm a sprinter. Sales leadership's my gift. I like to exit. So I want to partner in high multiple verticals with mid-cap companies, take a piece of their equity, because I'm not creative, I'm not an inventor, blow out their sales, we exit when they exit. And for me, it's just the culture of just the top sales assassins and of growth and social impact, and still being hungry but also allowing them to experience multiple exits. I think having a very non-corporate culture for high-level sales professionals.
That's a lot.
The speaking is what does this.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is Tony Robbins' disease.
So
every day.
Yeah, no, I feel you. So now you're going to be, so at Rise Conference, you're on the panel.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you feel like is something that you want to, your gift to these people?
Sales leadership. Which is very different than sales. So one of the questions in here is like, you know, what do you want to tell people about entrepreneurs that really want to expand their sales? Learn to lead, right? So for me, my formula is mindset plus skill set times leadership equals a company's result, a person's result, whatever, insert the entity result. So mindset is obviously all the things you are intangible. Emotional intelligence, attitude, desire, skill set. Oh, I know how to present, I know how to speak, I know how to close. But leadership's a multiplier. So what I mastered early on was I got great at sales, but I mastered sales leadership. And the difference between those two is, this is transactional. I sell this and I'm really good at it. Sales leadership is recruiting, compensation plans, expansion, culture, LMS, and what to say, when to
LMS.
Say it, learning management systems. So when you're onboarding 10 new people, what do they? What's their first 10 minutes? What's the questions? What their next 10 minutes?
The whole
training model.
Yeah.
And then as you expand into different countries, how to take their culture and merge it with your culture. And all of that is, it's a science in itself. And I think sales leadership is the most natural gift for me, and the thing I think I have the most mastery over.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, okay. So that's the gift that you want. So you're going to talk about sales leadership?
Yeah.
Because it's obviously a big void, right? Because people think it's like a good salesperson being a sales manager. Totally different thing.
Very different.
Very different thing.
One of them's checking boxes, checking your reports, checking, you know, did you make the calls? Management is necessary.
Yeah.
But by the way, if you hire the right people, you don't need to manage them. They're self-managed.
Right.
So I try to hire people that self-manage and I just lead, right? It's like, if I'm leading correctly and I've hired correctly, they will self-manage. That doesn't work for smaller roles or smaller.
But that's how you scale.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how you scale, right? That's the key to scaling, because everybody else wants to do everything themselves.
Which is impossible,
right?
And I think you said there's a void of sales leadership. I think there's a void of leadership, period.
Oh, like huge void.
Massive.
Yeah, void. Yeah, huge void.
And from 20 to 30, maybe 22 to 32, I became a magnet to all content leadership related. So it started first. So for 10 years, all I did was study leadership. And at first it was just, I want to read about how-to leadership. Mm-hmm. John C. Maxwell, the 21 of this, the 18 of that, mm-hmm. the 92 of that. And I was like, okay, I got that. Then it was this person on leadership. So the forefathers on leadership, Lincoln on leadership, MLK on leadership. So another author creating how-to steps of a leader. Yeah. Then I got addicted to the biographies of the greatest leaders and learning about their entire life and watching them from childhood into, you know, success. And I would do it purposely. I'd read 500-page book in the biography of JFK, and then a 500-page book on Che Guevara, who became, you know, mortal enemies at the exact same time. You start to see the process of them leading up to each other and the difference in you know, what they had to do and what created the antagonism in them, et cetera. So, yeah.
So what do you think are the good, what do you think are, somebody wants to be a good leader.
Yep.
What would be your advice to them to be a good leader? What are the top three things that you think are like, hey, if you want to be a leader, this is where I would focus.
Number one, leadership is a skill. So you can
Do you think everybody can be a leader?
I do.
Okay.
I
don't.
Okay. That's good.
I don't think everybody can be a leader.
I think more people have a natural tendency for it. I think more people are more gifted at it. But I think leadership is a skill that can be learned, just like sales can be a skill that can be learned, or just like.
And what skill is that?
Leadership or?
Yeah, what skill to be learned? So like, what would you say? Let's say I've got Joe.
Yep.
Joe has never done anything in terms of running a team.
Yep.
What's your advice? What skill is Joe working on?
So there's going to be many of those.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. I know it's a broad question.
Number one is the ability to get people to every day enjoy the work process and the flow daily while chasing a bigger vision. So it's got to be a greater vision.
Yeah.
They got to be able to communicate that vision, keep that vision in the front of people. Mm-hmm. They've got to understand that those people are not showing up though just for that vision. So what is their individual vision? How can I help you craft what your outcomes are for yourself, for your family, for your next year, your next 5 years?
Yeah.
Whatever length of time we have together, how can I connect the dots between this vision and your vision? So every day when you do show up, you and your brain, you're not doing it out of resentment or out of you feel like you have to.
Because
a lot of people show up to work because they have to.
Yeah, of course.
How do I keep you in alignment with the company's culture and values? So the accountability.
Yeah.
How do I lead you through? Preferably through love as opposed to pain, right? Mm-hmm. So and you have to know when the stick and when the carrot, which one. You have to have mastery over whatever you're selling yourself. I think that's the obvious one, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't lead people, and it doesn't have to be selling, but you can't lead people to do something you've never done.
Is leadership a democracy or a dictatorship?
Leadership is both, depending on the circumstance. So as the leader, you got to decide when you walk in and say, this is not, we're not voting on this. This is the decision.
Yeah.
And then you also
it's like China.
You also need to know when it is
a
democracy. I'm going to say, okay, guys, when you make a decision here, and I need your help and your support and your buy-in. But I think it's a little bit of both.
Yeah, I see that.
Mm-hmm. All right. So kicking it back the other direction. So you had referenced that you don't have the same belief of that anybody can lead. What's the thought process on that, or where does that stem from, or?
I think that, there's certain people that obviously have a natural skill for leadership, right? But, you know, generally speaking, leadership takes courage. And it takes, you have to have an ability to stand up for something that most people are not going to agree with or probably don't see.
Yeah.
See it the way that you see it. So they're just like, you're kind of on your own island, right? And you have to really have the courage to say, hey, you know what? I believe in this so much so that I'm willing to die on the battlefield for it, right? There's very few people that are going to do that. Very few people.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
But there's a distinction between who are willing to and can you learn the skill of, you know, of courage, or can you be taught courage? Or
I think to some degree, but I think there's some people that just can't.
Okay.
It's like, is everybody great at sales?
No.
Exactly.
But if you give enough repetition in the sales,
they could get somewhere, but they're never going to be you.
Yeah. Yeah. Great point. And I think a lot of the void of leadership in today is happening through how we're approaching social media. Mm-hmm. I think social media is creating a larger chasm.
How so?
Well, there's such a confusion now because leadership used to be synonymous with influence.
Yeah.
So I'd be like, okay, let's find the people with influence. Now the word influencer is its own thing, right? So now you have to detach the word influence almost from leader because you don't want it to be confused with influencer.
Yeah, so you're saying that somebody's got attention.
Doesn't make them a leader.
Okay. So is Simon Sinek a leader?
It's a great question. I think Simon.
Don't ask me what I think.
Yeah, I think Simon, I think anyone who has led their own people. So I'm glad we're going here. So last year I came up with a concept called the impact ladder. And I think speaker. And
see, I like you because you're a lot more diplomatic than me. You see how he handled that? He's so diplomatic. Like I saw how you, okay, that's good. That's good. Okay. Good.
I think speaker, author, expert.
People that lead people.
They're on the impact ladder, but I think mentors above that. You know, your mentors never said, so pay me X amount and, you know, I'll agree to mentor you. Mentors mentor you because they love you. And it's reciprocal because you got mentored. So now you want to mentor.
Yeah.
And above that's your leader. When you walk in and people walk into work, like, that's my leader.
Yeah.
And I think next to mommy or daddy, the greatest thing you could ever be called by another person is, that's my leader.
Yeah.
Right? Not that's my coach. Coaches get paid.
Yeah.
That's my accountability partner. You need that. It's great for the gym. That's my manager. It's cool. But that's much less impact.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on whether or not I think social media is creating more selfishness.
I think there's a fakeness to it, to your, you know, my point is that there's people now that are just getting attention because they're popular for being popular. And now all of a sudden that person is the authority on blah.
Yeah.
Right. And to me, it's like, unless you've done it, you're not an authority on blah.
Yes.
Okay.
100%.
You can be popular for being popular.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
What the fuck is a thought leader? I think
exactly.
That's where I lead.
Yeah.
What is a thought leader? Right. That's a philosopher.
Yeah.
If you say, what is a thought leader today? That's what a philosopher was hundreds of thousands of years ago.
Pretty much.
That's not leading.
No.
You don't get to say, well, I had a great quote, therefore I lead.
No.
No. So I am being more diplomatic just because I don't know the environment, but I have very strong beliefs around.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's those guys that, you know, like Simon Sinek, he's never run a company. So for people to take his advice, he sounds good.
Yeah.
You know, he looks interesting. He's got a great accent. So, you know, he could probably read the phone book and it sound like something you'd want to listen to. And those people have that talent, right? I don't have that talent, right? But I have an ability to actually do it.
Right.
Right. So some people, you know, that talk nicely about it and they sound interesting.
Yep.
But actually, if you were actually to apply, like if I applied what he talked about or talks about, I'd be bankrupt.
It's very socialistic approach to leadership.
I'd be bankrupt. Yeah. No, you'd be bankrupt. Yeah. Like yesterday, be bankrupt. I'd be on the side of the road with a sign.
You don't need to fire anyone. You don't need to let anyone go.
I mean, you know, get a consensus and all that. I mean, dude, that's just it doesn't work that way.
Yep.
So, but it sounds really cool. So what happens is you have a lot of people that they think that's what it is.
Yep.
And then they go and they apply that in their life and they find that they're actually losing in life and not winning in life.
Because the real world's hard.
Exactly. Yeah. So they got it. What they have to do is they need to talk to people like you, right? They need to talk to people like me. They need to talk to people that have actually done it And that's the actual thought leader, not people that sound interesting and eloquent. And I see it all the time on social media. I think it's hilarious. I think it's hilarious. I sometimes I try to like mimic that.
And the gap's getting wider, because think about the amount of coaches that are just regurgitating what another coach or expert or author is saying.
Yeah.
And it's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
And it's so confusing. Sometimes I watch a video and I send it to people and I'm like, what the fuck is he talking about?
Sometimes I watch a video I get sent 5 years later. I was like, oh, that was from something I said 5 years ago.
Yeah. I wonder if I'm stupid. I'm like, I'm a pretty smart guy. My IQ's pretty high. And I'm like, I don't understand what the fuck this guy's talking about.
Interesting. You know, one of the things that I did like is that there's a book called The Culture Code.
Mm-hmm.
And because I used to be a very rough leader, especially in my 30s.
What's rough leader?
I was more like let's say, Bill Belichick, let's say, than Dick Vermeil. You know, I was just more Bill Parcells, let's say. I was more in people's face. I identified more as like a sports leader, I think.
Okay, got it.
And I was very harsh. I was very harsh.
Yeah.
So you'll have a lot of people that would be like, I love what Nick taught me and he got me a lot of results, but he's an asshole. If you'd ask people from my early 30s, late 20s, I'd be like, and I don't like him because he said a mean thing to me or whatever. But what I do like about, say, Simon's content is there's certain pieces of it that'll take to soften certain pieces of my rigidity.
Yeah.
And Culture Code was a big
like listening.
Yeah. Like,
I'm still haven't got that. I don't listen to anybody.
and Culture Code was a big one for me. Daniel Coyle, who wrote Talent Code, because it's the case study. And I like that. If you're a high level scientist and you're doing a case study and I can pull from all your examples, I enjoy that of what were the most successful cultures. And one of that was the Navy SEALs. And it talked about safety. Just
safety and teamwork. Yeah.
Yeah. If the person doesn't feel safe, because I loved it in the context of Navy SEALs, they kick ass, they take names, they wipe people out. So they don't do a safe job. They don't do it in a nice, sweet, kind, caring way, but they have so much dependability. They know they're safe because of the team around them.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was the number one thing I took in the last few years that adapted my leadership style was, when people walk in today or when they're on a Zoom with me, do they feel safe? And if they don't feel safe, they're not going to give me their best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah. Yeah, you got to create a safe environment.
Yeah. So you're a new dad. How's that changed everything?
No, I love it, man. I'm having a blast. Yeah, yeah.
Has it changed your leadership style? Has it changed your...
Not really. I mean, I think I'm just more... I would just say more tiger than I've ever been, really. I mean, it's like, you know, no, I don't think it's really changed that. I think if anything, it's particularly, well, I think what it does do is it brings out a softer side of you,
right?
Because I'm a pretty hard guy in that sense. And I think that, you know, particularly my girl, Victoria, is like a whole new world with her. Right, like I have other boys already from a previous marriage,
okay.
Right?
Yep.
So I've experienced that, but having the girl is like a whole different deal, dude.
I'm so grateful that my daughter was born first.
Yeah.
Because that was the first.
You have two.
I have two. Yeah. A girl and a boy.
Okay, yeah.
And that was the first major.
Well, mine
change.
Was born first too. Like 1 minute.
The daughter was.
Yeah.
Well, but you said you had two boys before.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so if my son was born first, I don't know if I would have softened so quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
But I had 3 years with her and just like not wanting to get frustrated or upset or mad with her. And just and then Nicholas, he gives me all the reasons to.
Yeah.
But I had some good training from her.
Yeah.
If I had him first, it would probably have been a different story. But I think my leadership style has changed to be more loving and more empathetic because of having her.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, it makes sense. Well, I mean, I think having the kids is obviously great. And I think having the right spouse, like for me, having, you know, my having the wife that I have is really what allows me to really focus and do all the things that I do. Like if I didn't have her, I would not be able to do all the stuff that I do. Like even sometimes people are like, how do you do all this stuff? And I'm just like,
partner.
I have an amazing partner. Like I hit the lottery.
That's fantastic.
So that's just, and then now I can see when people talk about how important that decision is.
Does she have a sister?
She has a sister and she's married. to a phenomenal guy. But you know, they're but she and she's actually they both kind of have the same kind of vibe, you know, in terms of just their ability to really have a lot of patience and understanding and all that stuff. She's not a pushover, you know, right. My wife's not a pushover by any means. She's actually a very strong, powerful individual, but she also can look, she's, you know, she has a smarts, and that's what I look for in people. They have a smarts to read the room. Like, she can read the room. Nice. And I look for that in employees, I look for that in managers. Like, what's your ability to read the room? And really look and say, who's in front of you? And what are they trying to do? And are you going to help them or get in their way?
Right.
Right. And so she's got an ability to do that. So in terms of, you know, family and partnership, you know, that's why I have such a stable environment to be able to actually work and produce. You know, it's been huge. Like, since we got together, we got married, you know, a few years ago, my business has grown 278%.
Wow. Wow. Anchor.
Yeah.
It's total anchor.
Like, just, yeah, we've never had an argument. We don't fight, like, nothing. You know, and I actually talked to her about that when we got together. I'm like, dude, I don't want to fight. I don't want to argue about stuff. Like, either we're on board with everything or we're not.
Right.
And if we're not, then we'll just be friends and move on. And so we were able to get into, you know, an agreement on, you know, all the things that were important, right? Because what are you fighting about? You're fighting about things that you have a counter intention towards, right? You have a disagreement with.
Right.
Right. That's really what a fight boils down to. I disagree that you're working too much, or you're spending too much money, or you're spending time here and you're, you know, focused on blah when you should be focused on something else.
Yep.
So I literally sat down and wrote out all of the things that were important to me. Like, this is all the things that are important to me. Do you, and number one,
are you okay with this?
Are you okay with this?
Yeah.
And if you're not, what are you not okay with?
Yep.
And then I went down the list.
That's amazing.
And I went down the list. I'm talking about big, I'm talking about politics. I'm talking about money. I'm talking about
parenting.
My passion, the parenting, blah, 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 blah. All the shit that you don't talk about or that you wait 10 years to talk about.
How often do you talk about what we're talking about right now?
Not that much.
You need a whole series on this.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I wrote it down. And then I said, okay, for all of the stuff that I want, here's another list of all the things that I'm willing to give you in exchange for those things. Loyalty, monogamy, security, financial security, take a bullet for you.
Yeah.
All of these things. So there was an exchange.
Contract.
Yeah, it was a contract in terms of, hey, these are the things that are important to me because these are the things I just don't ever want to deal with. Yep. Right, like my goal is to create billions of dollars in wealth. I can't do that if I'm fighting with my spouse about a credit card bill.
Yep.
Or where we're doing this, or who we're hanging out with, or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to do that shit.
Yep.
If I'm fighting, I want to be fighting with somebody else that's related to a $1 billion deal.
Why do you think more people don't create those mutual expectations? Just fear?
I think it's fear. They don't even think about it, dude. Everybody gets into this bullshit of, oh, I have butterflies and I'm in love and I'm, you know, and his eyes or her body or her hair or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah.
But dude, if you can't see down the road and you can't look and see, what are you signing up for? What are you getting into? Are you in agreement with things or you're not? That's number one. Number two, everybody has this idea that they're going to change everybody. Oh, I like this girl. I like this guy. And I'm going to change this about her. Yeah. And I'm going to change this about him, blah, blah, blah. And I went into it saying, look, I'm not trying to change anybody. I'm not Captain Save-A-Ho. Okay? I'm like, hey, can I take you on face value?
Yeah.
If I can, great. If I can't, I don't want a fucking project.
Yep.
And that's what everybody does. Maybe because they got time on their hands. I don't fucking know. Or they're bored. I'm like, dude, I don't want a project, right? But most people go into it not having those tough conversations. Like, who did you vote for? You want to find that shit out in year five?
In year five was the last election?
you voted for who?
It's none of your business.
Who?
What do you mean it's none of my business?
Like nobody has that conversation. What are your thoughts on money?
Yep. What are your fears?
What are your fears about money? Are you the type of person limiting that's going to be like, you know, scrutinizing every single dollar spent? Do you believe in spending money? Do you not believe in spending money?
We don't need that, or we don't. What do we need that for?
Yeah. Or hey, I want to take risks. I don't believe in risks. But, you know, and now it's like now you're fighting about taking risks. So I was like, dude, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that.
You could do a whole mastermind just on this with a lot of very successful. Yeah,
and I guarantee if I did that, 50% of the people would probably get divorced that day.
You're probably right.
It's true.
You should probably do it with single men only.
Yeah, no, it's true because they're probably they know that they sitting in the back of their head, like, shit, he's right.
I'm still working on the
I should have had that conversation. Yeah, my wife doesn't like the fact that I take risks, that I'm signing a loan for this, and I'm doing this, and I did this, and blah, 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 blah. And next thing you know, they're fighting. I had one guy I talked to that he wanted to buy a car. He wanted to buy a car. And we're sitting here. And I don't know this dude, so I'm minding my own business. Yeah. I'm sitting here having lunch, minding my own fucking business. And this guy's talking about how he wanted to buy this car. And and he's talking to a friend of mine about it. And I'm just listening. Eat my food. He's like, I was going to get the car. And he makes the money to pay for the car.
Yeah.
And it wasn't crazy, but it was like $88,000, okay?
Price of a car now.
Price of the car. He's like, I want to get the car. I was like, but I didn't get the car. There's a car I wanted. I didn't get the car. Oh, my wife was going to complain about it. So me being me, I'm like, can you afford it? He says, like, yeah. Does your wife work? He's like, no.
What are we talking about?
So why are you talking about it? But look, here's the point. Poor guy's being suppressed. At the end of the day, the guy's with a girl, his partner, that's preventing him from wanting to get this car. The thing that he wants to do. Now, the guy works hard. And I asked him, can you afford it? Are you like up to your neck in debt? Like, he's like, nah, I don't have any debt. This is a car I wanted. I want to work hard. And I'm thinking, dude, I would kick that chick to the curb, okay? I'd be like, dude, like, I'm buying whatever the fuck I want to buy. If I work hard, I'm buying whatever I want to buy.
You created it.
I created it. If I want to buy it, I'm going to buy it.
Yep.
But this is what 90% of people are dealing with, dude. Like, this was a guy that was very successful and, you know, has his own business and all this stuff, but he's dealing with this stuff. So I didn't want
to... That will create resentment. The next time you want to go build a business or go hard at your business and you're like, okay, the outcome is X and I'm going to go want to do something with that X, but I'm going to be prevented.
Yeah.
Now you're actually could be subconsciously or subconsciously pulling back.
Consciously. No, consciously.
Something.
Yeah, consciously. I'm thinking, gee, if I'm that
what's
dude,
the point?
What's the fucking point, dude?
I'm not going to be able to get the, you know, any of the other stuff I want or.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just go get a job at Starbucks. Call it a day, dude. Seriously. What's the point? What is the point? You're working hard, taking risks. You want to get something that you want to buy. You can't do it because your spouse is like, And I'm thinking, dude, that the spouse should be championing you doing that.
Should be the biggest fan.
Should be your biggest fan. And if they're not on board with you, then you got to have those tough conversations to get on board. I'm not telling everybody watching this video to like go get divorced. But look, if you have somebody that's preventing you or is counterintention towards what you're trying to do, and you've never had those tough conversations, well, maybe now is the time to have those tough conversations. And you know what?
They might be relieved.
If you find out that they're for a different political party, or they don't like taking risks, or this and that, or they don't like to be flashy, and you like to be flashy, and all these types of things, or whatever, you got to get on the same page. But people don't have those tough conversations. What they do is they go out and they date, and they lie for 3 months. Oh, I love this. I love poetry and I love blah, blah, blah. And I love eating Russian food and whatever. You know, everyone lies.
Is there such thing as Russian food?
Yeah.
I've never had Russian food
then. The best Russian food I ever had was in Mexico City, actually.
Really?
Believe it or not. Long story. Oh. Anyway, but they all lie for 3 months. They all lie.
You're right.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Are you balanced? Yeah, I'm balanced.
Well, that's a lie in itself across life.
That's a whole lie. There's no balance.
What's interesting is the point you're making, it shouldn't also be done at the beginning, but I think there's, just like you do quarterly meetings and annual meetings, how often should that be done? Because people do change, not necessarily to get better, to get worse, but people just change as time goes on. You know, maybe somebody finds this very spiritual path and they're just down the rabbit hole.
I think people change, but I don't think that the core aspects of people change. Like, you know, you and I are never going to wake up one morning and say, oh, we don't want to build companies anymore.
Right.
Like, that's never going to happen. right? You may wake up one morning and be like, hey, you know, I want to slightly change this direction of this or that. But I'm talking about the core functionalities of a person.
Yep.
Those are the things that I think is important to have those conversations about, not only with your spouse, but even with your business partner. You know, like I had a business partner that didn't want to grow. Yep. He didn't want to get past 50 employees because he didn't want to pay for people's health insurance. How fucking stupid is that? Okay. Now, flunk on me that I should have asked those, this was, you know, 10 years ago, yeah. I should have asked those questions. Now I would be like, hey, so what are your visions? If your visions are, I want to grow it to $20 million in cruise, you're not my guy.
Right.
But those are the tough conversations that most people don't want to have because they get into this honeymoon phase in business, even with employees, and with their partner.
Great tie back.
Right? They just do. They just get into this honeymoon phase. And so I think whether it's in sales, whether it's in leadership, whatever, it's just really saying the things that you know you need to say, but you don't want to say it because you feel it's controversial or whatever. I think, you know, truth can all, like I believe you can always land the plane, right? No matter what it is you're trying to talk about, right? You obviously have that skill of being able to talk about tough subjects, which is another skill which people got to develop, right? But I think you have to generally talk about those tough things because if you do, A, you feel better, right? Because now you've kind of let it go and you're like, okay, it's therapeutic in a sense and you're talking about the elephant in the room. But I what I'm trying to impress upon people and I do in my own life, I don't feel that it's real to always be arguing and fighting and be in situations where you're constantly being in situations where you're just in disagreement. Right.
We go back to that same comment of the best organizations have safety. What you did is you created mutual expectations. So you knew what to expect. She knew what to expect.
Yeah.
So there's that layer of safety for years or decades to come.
Exactly.
Right. Which is interesting that when you go back to the culture code of the book, and it's like, oh, wait a second. You created safety for her. She created safety for you. Let's roll.
Exactly.
So, and when you tie that back to you should be doing that with your business partners, you should be doing that with your hires, especially your executives. It's as you say it, I'm like, we absolutely do that with any executive or, you know, any person that's going to be in a leadership function. Why don't men or women do that, when they're searching for a partner?
Yeah. Yeah. When I met my wife, it was like the first week.
I was going to say, you must do that early on. Cause I think what happens is you start to fall in love with someone, then you start to see red flags. Then you don't want to know because you're so in love with this person that you don't want to feel the pain of ending that.
Yeah, first week.
And I think it's just a trap.
The first week. I was like, first week.
Second date?
Pretty much. I was just like, dude, this is, I just didn't want to waste time. I didn't want to waste time.
Yep.
And I wanted to be honest. And I was like, look, this is what I'm about. Like, I know me and I know what I'm about and what my purpose is and what I'm trying to do. And I'm not trying to change for somebody. So I was like, this is who I am. I love to work. I love to build companies. I wanna have an extravagant life. I wanna help a lot of people.
Yeah.
And this is what I wanna do. And if you're not for that, you're within your rights to say, hey, no, I wanna be a low key person. I just wanna have a house and two cars and live in a subdivision.
White picket fence.
Great. Then go do that.
Yep.
Right? I'm not that guy.
Yep.
And if you want what I want, well, there's a price that comes along with that. And those conversations I had in like the first week saved me a ton of time.
What's a secondary characteristic or similar story to that that's had such an equal profound impact on your outcomes and anything that you've done? So that, to me, that's like, hey, here's one thing that I did that just changed the trajectory of my life. What would be another one?
I think the other thing would be having a very crystal clear image of exactly what I'm trying to do.
Okay.
And I don't think a lot of people do that. Like when you ask people, like, what do you want to have? It's, oh, well, you know, this. Well, I'm going to think about it. Oh, yeah. I want to have a house.
Yeah.
Where's the house? Oh, I don't know. Didn't think about it. Right?
Which is the basics of anything when it comes to goal setting or dream building.
It's crystal clear. And like for me, I knew exactly the businesses that I want to have. I want to have 30 companies the size of Blackstone or bigger. I knew exactly the wife I wanted to have down to the city that she was from.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, I'm talking about crystal clear, bro.
Wow.
I'm talking about defining it.
What city is this?
She's from Medellin.
Okay.
Okay. So, like, that was the city. Like, I literally defined every single part of it. And I do that for everything in my life. So anything that, when I talk about clear vision, I'm not talking about, oh, I want to build a business. Oh, I want to have a spouse. Oh, I want to have a friend. It's a clear vision of it. And then anything that comes in my day, in my life, that doesn't fit it or doesn't help propel me to that, yep. I remove it.
Yep.
Just that. And that's where you get the whole reputation of being shrewd.
Time value.
Because I'm just like, that, this thing or whatever it is coming in my life. It ain't going to help me get to where I want to be. Boom, done.
Yep.
Move on to the next thing. And that's the best advice that I could give to people, because I apply that in my life every single day. And I think you have to be ruthless in order to do that.
Well, the level of self-awareness and discipline, your ruthless discipline is probably...
Like, I've gotten rid of a lot of people in my life because you just don't fit it.
Yep.
They're not bad people. And somebody else may be like, oh, well, you know, they're a good person. They may be good, but they're not good for my plan.
Right.
And that's where you have to be like, okay, where's my loyalty? My loyalty is to my goals.
And people have trouble swallowing that pill, but you can still love those people. But you can love them from afar.
About that all the time. Love them all you want.
Yeah. Like,
just be over there.
You know,
you over there. Love you from afar. I'll send your ass a card. You know what I mean? You'll be on my Christmas list.
Yep.
Whatever. But you're over there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amen.
Amen. And that's I think that has contributed to my success more than any other thing that I've done in my life.
So if you were to encapsulate that into one statement back, would it be having a crystal clear vision for what I want and the discipline to not allow anything in or influence me away from it?
Yeah. Simple as that. And I really enjoyed the conversation, man. I had a great time today. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Yeah. You know, I think some of the stuff that we spoke about today was not normally spoke of, let alone on a podcast, but it needs to be shared behind closed doors. It needs to be at dinner tables. You know, you went deep on certain topics that are very taboo or most people avoid because it's highly triggering for most people, right?
Yeah.
So I think if people really spend the time to dive into the topics that you covered today, specifically around relationships and specifically around, you know, almost the contract between that, I think you can change a lot of people's lives with it.
Appreciate you, man.
So thank you for having me
on. Yeah, of course.